Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Dr. John Husing. Dr. Husing is the leading authority on the Inland Empire's economy, an area he's been studying since he wrote his doctoral thesis on the region in the 1960s. His influence on the business and political landscape has been so extensive that the Los Angeles Times named him one of the most powerful people in Southern California in 2006. He is the writer of the Quarterly Economic Report, an economic newsletter now in its 20th year. His company, Economics and Politics, Inc., provides consulting services for municipalities and counties with economic strategies, statistical data packages, recommendations for public policy, and briefing presentations to businesses and to political leaders about the nature, growth, and economic trends of Southern California. Dr. Husing's website includes copies of this newsletter, PowerPoint presentations of various speeches, and photographic glimpses of his exotic travel adventures. Welcome to our show, Dr. Husing.
Thank you very much.
I went to your website and I saw, I think, what your most recent venture was Antarctica?
Yeah, I took a 24-day trip by sea. We left Tasmania, south of Australia, went 1,250 miles south across the Southern Ocean, through the ice floes that trapped a ship this last year. And then from there, we broke out into the bay that's down right off the coast of Antarctica, crossed the bay and got to the deepest penetration you can get by sea into the depths of Antarctica, and then back. So stopping at a couple of sub-Antarctic islands, really an extraordinary adventure.
Especially since you spent some time of it at the bow during quite the windstorm.
Oh, you must have read one of my letters that I sent out to my friends. Yeah, I'm a bit of a nut when it comes to adventure, and we were in a 50-mile-an-hour wind with waves that were 25 to 30 feet high, and I was out there alone, and the temperature is probably 1 or 2 degrees below freezing. And as the boat was going along, it would, the pilot or the captain would be nudging it away from moving directly into the wind, which is where we were trying to get. But every once in a while, we'd go over a wave, and we would, instead of hitting the waves at a glance, we would stick the bow of the ship in a 30-foot wave, and the entire boat would shudder, and then the spray would go up 6 stories in the air. And because of the wind, when it hit you, it was like, you know, blowing sand. It was amazing. I was out there for 45 minutes. I just loved it.
This isn't the first story I've heard like this. I heard you jogged in Africa, and it wasn't necessarily in the safest of areas. Is that true?
Yeah, I ran 8.5 miles through the heaviest concentration of lion back when I was in my late 30s. It was not probably the brightest thing I've ever done. And at the very end of it, when the truck that suddenly realized I hadn't run around the compound, that it was rather running across in the middle of where all the lion and things were, caught up with me, and I got on the truck, and 2 miles later, a lioness who was asleep on the side of the road, and at the rate I was running in those days, and 14 minutes later, I'd have run right up to her.
Oh, my goodness.
The lioness came up out of the ditch on the side of the road and took a swipe at the side of the truck.
Now, the picture I see of you usually is in a suit lecturing. This is quite the other side.
Oh, this is what I do to get away from the suit and tie.
One of the things that I think only comes with experience, and you've been in an Inland Empire for 5 decades looking at this economy, is I've always been fascinated with your progression of a city or a county. You know, you've done it in stages.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a That's a very key insight. And in the 60s, what stage was the Inland Empire in, and what's been the progression?
Well, in the 60s, the area was independent of the rest of Southern California. What we would have called this integrated Southern California economy was pretty much had gotten to Claremont, but not to Montclair, or not to Chino. Or Upland. It had gotten to Claremont no farther when I first started studying it. And we had our own economic base out here. You had Kaiser Steel in Fontana and the Santa Fe repair shops in San Bernardino. There was some aerospace work going on in Riverside. It was its own place. So it is only later that Southern California reached it. That really started to happen in the middle to late 70s when what I call the first stage of development occurred. And that is when the residential community came to the conclusion they could no longer build a home that a middle-class family could afford in L.A. Orange counties. And so they migrated into the western edge of San Bernardino or Riverside. So they were starting to move into Corona, starting to go into Upland and Montclair and Chino, a little bit into Ontario. And so you've got that first move where you start to get hooked up to the greater metropolitan area. When that occurs, there's a couple of characteristics you always see. The first one is a lot of people and no jobs. So almost everybody's a commuter. A little later on, Stater Brothers shows up with a store, CVS shows up with a pharmacy, somebody opens dry cleaning, and so you get the consumer service or population serving activities, generally relatively low paying, and they take care of the secondary wage earners and families, but the incomes aren't high enough, and so the primary wage earners in this stage are still commuting.
Okay.
We see this right now in three places, really. First of all, in the high desert. That's exactly what's going on up there. You also see it in the South I-215, say Paris, Menifee, Hemet, San Jacinto, that area.
Right.
And then a little bit you see it in the Pass area going out to Beaumont. But to show how precise it is, it didn't move out quite as far as Banning. Stopped in Beaumont.
Right.
But that's generally the first stage of the development.
Well, and that's a very big deal to know in advance. I mean, if you can look at something and say, okay, this is in this stage but headed to this stage.
Yeah.
If you're a developer, you're buying land or optioning land when land has just been sitting there for forever.
Yeah, as I like to say in my speeches, at that particular point, the view is that nobody in their right mind would want to go that far away and live.
Right.
And then lo and behold, pricing sends them there.
The 2014 version of the Inland Empire, how do we differ economically from Orange County?
Well, we've gone through two of the three stages of maturing, where Orange County is far into the full flowering of a region. We haven't gotten that far yet. The second stage of development is when another group of developers, this time industrial developers, ends up with the same need that you had earlier with housing. They need a lot of land. They can't find it anymore in the urban core, and so they migrate out. This started happening in 1985 in Ontario, when I remember the first big industrial facility being built by Blauplanka, German electrical automobile dealership or operation. And it begins to bring the blue-collar job base that's not a bad match for who moved there for affordable housing. So we've been through that whole stage, and that's matured now in the western edge of the Inland Empire. It's currently operating in the Moreno Valley, San Bernardino, Redlands, areas like that. So you're starting to balance off the relationship of jobs and housing at that point. But you don't have the last stage of the maturing of an edge area, which is where Orange County's gone through it, and the Inland Empire has not, and that is the high-end move. We started to see it in the last housing cycle, and what you saw occur there was all of a sudden you had a big demand for upscale, quote, affordable housing, and this is the middle 30s to middle 40s, maybe early 50s family that can afford a really nice house, but there's price so far out of line in a place like Orange County, you can't afford it. So they begin to migrate. And what they bring is their educations, as well as their wealth, their incomes, and their spending. And but the it brings you an a high-end labor force that up until then you really don't have. And the stage right after that is then the companies who can use those workers begin to find it in their interest to move, because a lot of them are willing to work for a little less, not to commute. That started happening essentially from Rancho to Upland to Chino Hills to Chino to Norco and Corona along the western edge, and then down in Temecula Marietta in the southwestern edge of the Inland Empire in the last housing cycle. When the housing collapsed, it shut that off. We will see the return of that, and that is when the area will then begin to have a full matured economy like you find it in Orange County.
So Orange County has a lot less commuters because they have gone through that third stage and matured, and they're staying there, and the jobs are there, and the companies are there.
Well, actually, what's interesting, and I just looked at this the other day, and it was kind of surprising. A little over 16% of Orange County's workforce migrates out of the county every day to work.
Okay.
In this area, it's a little over 20%. So there's only a 4% differential. And anybody that doesn't believe that, I would welcome them to go and get on the I-5, try to get from Orange County to downtown L.A.
Okay.
You can't. No. Or the 405 going down to San Diego. So it's much more mature. It obviously has higher income, broader set of you know, consumer experiences and entertainment experiences and that sort of thing. Whereas this area really is missing that last piece. So if I want a good lawyer or a good accountant or a good financial advisor, the odds are 50-50 that I may have to go to Orange County or L.A. to San Diego to find that person. Whereas in those areas, they're all there.
In the Inland Empire, are we more heavily skewed toward needing an industry I call construction to do well economically?
Absolutely, because of the nature of our workforce. Who moved here for affordable housing? Well, it was largely people who, on a basis of income, needed a lower price threshold on housing. That tends to be a screen on the education of the people who moved, because income and education were so closely correlated. So you brought here a very large base of people who are not well educated. 46.7% of our adult population stopped their education through high school or less. That means they need jobs where they can get into the sector without major barriers of education like you would find in teaching or civil engineering or anything like that. So you can get into it and then work your way up skill ladders to the middle class. Construction is one of those sectors. You badly need construction. And over half the jobs we lost in the Great Recession in this area came about simply because of that one sector.
And thus far, at least single-family housing, although it's improved, we're nowhere close to even a normal level, much less a boom level.
That's absolutely accurate. In 2013, we had round figures about 6,500 single-family housing permits. That's more than the previous 4 years, so there was a shift up. But if you go back into the decade of the 90s, most of which was characterized by about a 7-year downturn in housing prices, the level that we have today in 2013 is less than half of what was being permitted through the worst part of the 1990s.
Right.
So we've got a long way to go.
You know, it's interesting. You know, this downturn has been characterized as a great recession, but for real estate,
it was
the Great Depression.
No, there's no question. That's exactly accurate.
Nationally, too, the numbers still haven't improved. Construction is still in the doldrums, even though there's probably some bright spots in oil areas.
Yeah, it's interesting that as recently as today, the chairwoman of the Federal Reserve System commented that her real worry for the continued pace of the recovery is because the housing sector has not sustained the kind of strong growth you normally get at this stage in a recovery.
Correct. So that's it's interesting. You almost have a dichotomy because on the front page of one of your presentations called Building an Expansion, you kind of have a chart that looks like a roller coaster, and it shows the different emotional feelings that you have depending on what cycle we're in. And you kind of have us pegged between optimism and excitement right now. And that's probably the overall view. But when someone like, I forget her name.
Janet Yellen.
Thank you. Yellen says that housing could be an issue and negative. Usually there's policies that become more favorable to help that out.
Well, the problem you have is the policies to make it more favorable, essentially that she can control and her colleagues, is interest rate policy.
Correct.
And in any historical context, today's interest rates remain extremely low. So there isn't they don't have the tools that they have traditionally had to be able to stimulate because they've already tried it, and to date it hasn't really worked for a variety of fairly complex reasons. But I personally think the main one is what caused this downturn was the mortgage market. It's the thing that set it off. So it was the bullseye of the issue, and therefore it's just going to take time until it heals. We're seeing a lot of signals that there's healing going on, but the patient is not yet ready to get out of bed and run around.
Now, okay, the healing part. Maybe there's more psychological damage to real estate than I was willing to acknowledge, because what you're saying is true. If I look at charts, we should be in the middle of one heck of a bull run. The payment's affordable. The interest rates are still ridiculous, and yet we're not. And so I wonder, is there psychological issues where people are looking at this going, I don't even know if I'm going to have a job, so I'm not going to sign up on a mortgage.
And you put your finger on what is probably going to be a 20-year phenomenon at least. I am old enough that my mother and father were in high school in the middle of the Great Depression back in the 1930s. They both graduated from high school in 1930s. Well, Dad didn't graduate, but Mom did, in 36. I was born in 41. That generation's experience of the Depression colored their views of risk versus being conservative throughout their lives. I suspect we are going to see a hangover of this experience very similar to that, where people are going to be cautious, much more cautious than we are traditionally used to in modern times as a consequence of this experience.
Do you think that forces household formation to lag as well, as you have somebody that's in college saying, I think I'll just stick around here where there's no bills?
I have friends, and their kids are in their 20s, and they're all, one of them has three kids. They're all still, the oldest is 29, they're all still living at home.
Okay, and that's unusual.
And all three of them are professionals.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, and they don't really seem in any hurry to go form a family and take off. It's a completely new experience of that young generation like that. But I think that's partially caused by we've just been through a really tough time to get a job and keep it, that really the kind of job that you might be looking for.
I know a lot of people take that as saying, okay, that generation's going to be different. They don't want the 10,000 square foot lot in a house. They want to live in an apartment, and they want to have flexibility on going wherever employment is and all that. I personally don't buy that, but am I wrong?
I'm a great skeptic of that. We had a twice, and this was before the Great Recession, so some of this will have changed. But we surveyed people, WRCOG, Western Riverside Council of Government, surveyed commuters and asked them, would you live in a, would you favor moving closer to your job if it involved an attached home or apartment? And 87.5% said no.
Mm-hmm.
They then surveyed renters, and 72% plus said no. And it really showed you that, contrary to what a lot of the so-called advanced thinkers, who generally, you know, have their MAs in planning and things like that, spend their life talking to one another, contrary to what they're saying, I agree with you. I think as the market heals, you're going to see people wanting to live in detached single-family homes. A lot of people in Southern California are from overseas. That's a great dream. In the Hispanic community, I've always found a tremendous desire to own a piece of land. And so, and that's the fastest growing group within our population. So my instinct is, yeah, if I'm young and don't have children, then as an empty nester, yeah, maybe that's the way I'm going to think. But, you know, I just don't see it, what you have a couple of kids wanting to be in an apartment. I just don't believe that happens. And then I look at my friends who are senior citizens. I am. I'm going to be 73 in next month. And as I look around, I don't see them moving in to downsizing.
I'm so glad you said that. I was actually, the next question I want, I mean, I believe you're right. I think our generation is used to space.
Well, I went the opposite direction. I went from a 2,100 square foot house to a 3,500 square foot house, and it barely contains me.
I absolutely am glad to have someone of your knowledge say that, because I thought, my gut feeling was, wait a minute, our generation has kind of had its way just because we were the big glut of people. And so we sort of been catered to, and I'm just thinking, am I going to go ahead and, you know, go down to a 1,200 square foot, two bedroom common wall, anything? Not willingly.
Yeah, that's again, I think a lot, as you indicated, this is my fifth decade. I started studying the Inland Empire economy 50 years ago this year in September when I took a job at San Bernardino Valley College as a 22-year-old college professor. And over that time, I've seen, I believe it is, five major downturns in real estate. And every time at this point in the cycle, people begin to over forecast the behavior they're seeing at the bottom.
Exactly.
And
multifamily households and
all
that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember being in Claremont at a seminar in 1962. I was my first year of graduate school, and one of my professors was on the city council in Claremont. He came in looking like somebody beat him up with a bat. We said, you know, Lauren, what's going on? And he laughed, and he says, oh, I'm on the city council, and there's this young developer, by the way, his name was Ralph Lewis, who wanted to put attractive homes north of Foothill Boulevard, where nobody had ever built.
Right.
And the big argument was, nobody's going to want to commute from Claremont to L.A.
That, you know, I remember someone very knowledgeable in the 70s writing a piece, and I read it at Cal Poly. They have that report, and we only have 10 seconds left. But they were talking about that everybody's going to be willing to live in a 700-foot condo. Okay, we've got to end this segment. Check out the website, John at...
No. www.johnhusing.com.
Okay, and using is H-U-S-I-N-G.
Right.
Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.